This is Mae Brussel. This is part two of broadcast number 710 of World Watchers, July 15th, 1985. I was going right to Simon Wiesenthal and his connections to the SS and the powers that be in the chronology of his life, but I decided to rearrange the material because I think it's more important to start with this format, but it will lead right to Simon Wiesenthal. Jack Anderson had an article, June 26, 1985, 4 days after the official closing of the Joseph Mengele case, closing in quotes, he said, "Our intelligence sources are not convinced that Dr. Mengele is dead." And he gives some examples of why he doesn't think he's dead and didn't drown in 1979. And remember, it's Jack Anderson who wrote in his newsletter in 1984, around December 84, that the CIA was going to fake a death of Joseph Mengele, but it wouldn't be Mengele. And again, the CIA involvement links to the shooting attempt of Ronald Reagan, to the shooting attempt of the Pope, and now mingling it down with Mengele, because, as I say, all of these tie together in many ways that I will be linking in the weeks to come, or I might have mentioned before, but we'll be going into more. Jack Anderson cited these just briefly. Gisa Stammer, the hostess who housed Joseph Mengele from 1960 or the middle of 60 on for quite a few years, was being interviewed by the press and the investigators, but the husband, Giza, G-I-Z-A, Stammer, has not yet been interviewed. He's on his way to Singapore. And I mentioned that that ship that he took with his son, a officer in the Merchant Marine, could have gotten Mengele out of Paraguay and out down across over to Brazil and then out of Brazil. And on the way to the Orient, it's already been a month. And, of course, he's never landed anywhere or been interviewed. He's the most mysterious person in this case, and the package that went on that ship, in particularly a person that could have been on that ship, just as that little Volkswagen bug in front of the hospital when Reagan got his blood, there's certain key events or people, and Mr. Stammer and his son, the captain, are two of them, and the passenger that went to Singapore and Japan. Secondly, he said Mengele didn't live alone from 1962 to 64, as Mrs. Stammer said. They said he was lonely and stayed with them. He was married, his wife Martha, his second wife, and his stepson Carl Heinz, who went on to be the manager of the Mengele tractor factory in Günzburg. They were down there with him in South America. He didn't live alone those years. If you catch it one lie, you know that the others have to be wrong. She was in South America, and the passports and all that would show it. Third Paraguayan dictator Stroessner, Alfredo Stroessner from Bavaria, told the Central Intelligence Agency in 1965 that Mengele was living in Paraguay, and he was supposed to be in Brazil from 1961. They said he never left. He was close to the homes or the safe houses. And another point, the fourth, is that Mengele was in Portugal in the 60s. He also was there in the 1980s. It was verified that he was sending Christmas cards from Portugal to Paraguay, and I mentioned that on another broadcast. Some of these points I've had, and I appreciate the fact that Jack Anderson is itemizing these, and I hope he keeps up with this. He was in Portugal. He hadn't drowned. He was sending Christmas cards from Portugal. Next, Mengele's frequent visitor was a frequent visitor to Paraguay, and he had a rancher he stayed with. He had his own room. He went for extended periods, and they're trying to say he never left Brazil. Attorney Fritz Steinecker made a secret visit to Israel weeks before the tip. That's very, very important that he mentioned him, that he went to Israel, because I told you Fritz Steinecker was the attorney that I was told, I may be wrong, but prove me wrong, went to Zurich, Switzerland earlier with money to deposit for Joseph Mengele, but was in there in April of 1985. And then if it was weeks before he went from Zurich in April the 12th, then to Israel. And I mentioned a member from the Anti-Defamation League that was with him, and Mr. Buell of Associated Press. They're putting money, allegedly are putting money into the account of Mengele, but now I know where the money went. I'm pretty sure I have an idea. They can't use that account anymore. So at this point, they're probably taking it out because they can't use it anymore. And then he questioned the suspicious timing and the tip that led to Hans Settlemyer's home, and that's what I want to talk about with you. I briefly went on it before and didn't have a chance to go into the details. So Jack Anderson wrote this story questioning, and he's not the only person who's questioning whether Joseph Mengele is alive or not. Remember the press conference, June the 22nd, when the chief of federal police, Romeo Tuma, said that this was Joseph Mengele 99% sure. Well, he went to Frankfurt, Germany this week. The San Francisco Examiner had a story July the 8th, Frankfurt to test the remains of Mengele. West Germany, the government there in Frankfurt has remains that they believe to be Joseph Mengele. It's not positively now. They say there isn't a chance it could be anybody but him. I'll read you some of the adjectives probably next week. But now they believe they are his, and they went to Frankfurt for further testing. Well, if Simon Wiesenthal is 99% sure that that's Mengele, then what is all the testing in Germany? Why does he have to jump on the bandwagon and send people this dictator, this tumor from the secret police there in the death squads doesn't believe or can't be sure, but then why does Simon Wiesenthal have to believe it? So he takes some teeth. He took two teeth to Frankfurt. Now, when they dug up the grave originally, there were three teeth. Then they went back a few days before the case closed and went through the dirt and found four more teeth. And then the final conclusion is they worked on 10 teeth. Well, I don't know which of those they took, but they took two back there, and they took three hand bones. One was an injury to the hand, and the other story was that he had a genetic defect in the hand. We'll go into the evidence later, but he took three hand bones and pieces of hair that were dug up from the grave June the 6th, and they took them to Frankfurt, and they said that the conclusions in Brazil were preliminary findings last month, that they were remains. Now, would you, the ordinary person reading the media, the mass media on television and news, seeing the skull on the table, would you believe that that was a preliminary finding, that was Joseph Mengele, or would you say that they were certain, without any doubt, with most definite opinion, it was Mengele? Well, the very man doing the investigation now claims it was only preliminary. So he's taken some teeth and hands and hair. A lot of questions not answered, but he went on there. A man important in helping identify the body, and this is a clue to how the whole story unfolded. His name is Ellis Curley, K-E-R-L-E-Y. The Washington Post has a long article about him, June 25th, 1985. He helped identify the body of Joseph Mengele. He was sent by our United States Justice Department that was watching the John DeLorean trial, that knows of the possible links of DeLorean to Mengele and the bank account and Klaus Barbie. Our Justice Department wanted to end this thing, of course, as did West Germany, and get it over with. But so Mr. Ellis Curley from Maryland, no doctor's degree or identification, went to Brazil to help with the conclusions that it was absolutely, his adjectives are positively, absolutely, no doubt, and I'll get back to those later. But in this interview in the Washington Post, he says that earlier in the year, which would have to be January or February, he doesn't say the month, early in the year, the United States government, the United States government, not Frankfurt, Germany, or not Brazil, sent him pictures of a man, photographs of a man in South America, and he studied these photographs and felt that this was 95% chance it was Mengele. So by January or February, they were already working on a skull with this man studying it, and then he goes down and verifies it's Mengele. So what pictures of a skull did Washington have or West Germany have? And I'll detail some of that when we get into evidence. They're studying the Mengele skull, and then they send him over, and he says, yes, that's him. So the point is, as I get into the chronology, that Curley was handling this, and the United States government was working on that story. See, if Mengele were alive, you wouldn't have to measure these skulls or guess where he is or who he is. But they must know that he's going to be dead, and they're going to pull this out of this grave in Brazil, and therefore they have to work on these measurements several months before they go to the grave. Now, how did they get to the grave, and what happened? Just to run down very quickly, in 1960, Adolf Eichmann was arrested in Argentina. Mengele was almost caught, and he went quickly to Brazil, where Wolfgang Gerhard from Austria, a member of Hitler's Nazi army, a avowed Nazi, arranges a safe house. He's part of the Odessa network, the spy net, the general resurgence of Nazism and funding war criminals overseas. He arranges a house for Joseph Mengele in Brazil with the Stammers. So in 1960 to 63, he's in Brazil for sure, in São Paulo, Brazil. Now in 1963, the same time when Kennedy had been murdered, And I've linked that to Martin Bormann and the Nazis in Argentina, where he had lived until 60, and the network was set up in the 60s to kill John Kennedy. Mengele was associated with Hans Sedlmeier, and Simon Wiesenthal mentioned as far back as 1963. He knew of the contacts of Dr. Mengele in South America and Hans Sedlmeier, the manager of the Mengele farm machinery factory. Well, he'd been 3 years in Brazil, so Wiesenthal knew he was in Brazil if he was working with Sedlmeier, who was sending the money back and forth to the Stammers, and that he gave the tip to the Frankfurt prosecutor, but they didn't do anything. So he said, when the prosecutor is not observing Sedlmeier, it's not my guilt. It wasn't his guilt, but it became his big bucks, his hundreds of millions of dollars that he wants, his fame, and he wants a Nobel Peace Prize. He has no guilt. He says that Frankfurt doesn't do anything, but he pretended. He was absolutely silent, and it was only in the last couple of months or this past year when the links of Klaus Barbie to Mengele and Steinecker became prominent through various in law enforcement investigating these things, that they had to get Mengele. In 1975, Mr. Steinecker had said, Sedlmeier rather, had said that he talked and gave an interview to the New York Times, and he said that he was in close touch with Dr. Mengele in South America. So anyone who knows that Sedlmeier manages the Mengele factory in Günzburg, and he's in touch with Mengele, would know that he's touching bases down there in South America, and Mengele is down in São Paulo, Brazil. In 1971, Sedlmeier was called by a Frankfurt prosecutor under oath, and he said that he was in touch with Mengele, and they asked him about it at the time. Nobody did anything. This was 1963, 71, 75, nothing is happening. Now, one thing that happened was from 1979, our elections in 1979 to 1980, when Ronald Reagan won the election in November of 1980, everything changed in this country. There were changes of policies. Reagan was to be president. Otto von Bolschwing, who headed the Galen organization, Eichmann Superior, was in California under the nose of Ronald Reagan with his secretary, Elaine von Damm. Reagan had strong alliances with the World Anti-Communist League, with Licio Gelli of the P2, with Francesco Pazienza. He had Mr. Lev Dobryansky made ambassador to the Bahamas from the World Anti-Communist League. He works in the Defense Department with John Singlaub, the head of the World Anti-Communist League. So these Nazis felt pretty safe through this period from 1979 up to the 80s. There was no problem. And as I said before in a broadcast, in 1979, there was a report that Joseph Mengele was heavily involved with narcotics and that Hans Sedlmeier, Mengele's the factory manager, was the link to him, but nobody looked for him. And all this was going on. They referred in 79 to Hans as the money man, and this was totally ignored all of this time period. From up till 1979, Rolf Mengele had been down to see his father in 79. He went back in 77. He went back in 79. He used American Express cards for traveling. Don't leave home without us. And in 1976, what happened, Mr. Bossert and Mrs. Bossert were told to arrange for the burial of what would be Joseph Mengele. And this is very, very important. In 1976, Mr. Wolfgang Gerhardt writes a letter to Mr. Sedlmeier. 1976, this is in his house when the Frankfurt police come in May 1985. And they're going to come to that house. And this letter described the future burial of the man that would be Mengele. Going back to 1976, he arranged this burial. He went to the Embu Cemetery and said, I want this buried where my mother is, next to my mother. And then he left, gave papers to Joseph Mengele, even though he was 14 years younger than him, went back to Austria and died mysteriously 2 years later. But the arrangement for Joseph Mengele's death took place in 1976 at that cemetery. He said, I have an old relative who's going to die. Put him into this grave at Embu and bury him there. A year later, 1977, Rolf goes down, as I say, with his American Express card, visits his dad. Nobody cares or checks. Gerhardt dies. In 1979, Mrs. Bossert goes to the cemetery in February with this grave, and she falls into uncontrollable weeping, and the manager at the cemetery is not allowed to look inside that coffin. Now, anybody working at a cemetery could have looked. I mean, he had 2 days or a day, and she has to go home. She wasn't with it day or night. So the only witness to what was in that grave and the arrangements for the grave was a man. Later, they wrote up that this body was 54 years old, which doesn't even jive with the bones and what was going on at this particular burial plot later. But it was arranged in 76. But the letter for the burial at that cemetery that they're going to come across now was in the home of Settlemyer in 1985, as if you would keep that and have the police come in at that time and go right to the grave. Now, incidentally, going on in San Paulo, Brazil, all this time simultaneously, well, Romeo Tuma, the federal police, ran his death squads as a secret intelligence team, is the group known as Tradition, Family, and Property. This is a very far-right-wing group that has been linked to Aja. When his trial started in May 29, 1985, he was testifying about his links to Madonna, the Fatima, and going into the predictions of this particular story, the Fatima secret and the attempt against the Pope he was citing. And Aja and the people behind the plot to kill the Pope are linked to Syrian gun running and narcotics connections that go right down to Tomasa Busati down in San Paulo, Brazil. And there were two attempts on the life of the Pope, not only in March of 81, but one later, and involved Tradition and Family and Property cult that used pictures of the Pope now for shooting practice. And their home base is in San Paulo, Brazil, the same area that is going to tie up later to the narcotics and the fascist group around Aja. Ties up already, but I just want to mention this briefly. Now, in 1982, William Hetrick was arrested. I've gone into this with you, and I just want to go over those dates again. And he said, I'll deliver John DeLorean on narcotics charges. DeLorean was arrested in October of 82. On drug charges, and it was my allegations starting in 1983 when I learned about these connections and put them on the air starting in August 83 of the possible links of the money of DeLorean going to Klaus Barbie into Mengele's account in Zurich. Now, in 1983, Rolf Mengele was sending pictures of himself and Christmas cards to the Bossarts in South America. Mr. Tuma wouldn't release them, but he was in touch with them all this time down there, and there's evidence to believe that they weren't wasted on any particular person, but Rolf was sending them down for the family and his father particularly. Now, in 1983, moving on to 83, 2 years before this all comes down, John DeLorean has been arrested. Klaus Barbie has been sent to trial in France, where he can't start trial until, as I say, they officially bury Joseph Mengele and can't be seen at trial and so forth. In 1983, a man dies by the name of Hans Ulrich Rudel. Rudel was one of the leaders of the Odessa movement, the worldwide Nazi movement. I'll read you the biography of Rudel in a moment. I want to get to the chronology of this first and then back to Rudel. He dies, and in his notebook is the name of Hans Settlemyer, the manager of the firm that all of these agencies knew about, the CIA, the Frankfurt, Germany investigator, the police force, the interviews, and so forth, court records. His name is in the address book of Hans Ulrich Rudel, which is very important because of the Odessa connections of him to the Nazis later, and because 4 years earlier the CIA knew that Settlemyer was funding Mengele and that Rudel is the funder of the Nazi money throughout South America and Germany and America, coming back up to America. Now, in October 83, Mr. Busetta, links to the mafia, was arrested, so that the drug connections were coming together, the Mengele Barbie drug connections, the Zurich banks would come together eventually. These people must have panicked. Of course they panicked. And with Barbie arrested and Busetta talking and Rudel's name in the books of his notebook with Settlemyer into his address book, the connections later were to link to Steve Baum, to Syria, to the P2, to the CIA, the plots to kill the Popes, the Pope, and so forth. So in this time period, starting in 1983, there must have been a general panic that they would be ready to exhume the body that they had put and arranged in 1976, that it would die soon. If none of this surfaced, you wouldn't have to dig out the body. But if it all surfaced, you had a body there that you could go for. Now, in 1984, Simon Wiesenthal was saying how he had sightings of Mengele down in Paraguay, and I've given on these broadcasts some of the sightings leading up to this particular story. Now, with this general panic, and also Ricardo Riefenstahl, the organized crime person, the cocaine dealer, who was arrested in Germany, was talking about living with Mengele and working with Martin Bormann, narcotics traffic. That was in February of 85. That was just about the straw that broke this story open, and something had to be done as of February 1985. And I'm building up to what the way the story broke. With Riefenstahl and these various people arrested, they had to start digging and bring up this body. And they had the provisions there in case they needed it, but they had to bury Mengele because of the connections to the world drug traffic and Barbie, and then back to the United States. So in March of 85, just in March, there were elections in Brazil. The new Democratic president was killed, either poisoned, or they say down in Brazil, the newspapers, he was shot, with his links again to the Vatican, to William Simon, to George Shultz, and Henry Kissinger. Negredo Neves was dead in March of 85. Now, in March of 85, and this is clue number one of the panic of ending the case, a letter went to from Paraguay to a prison in Germany where the West German authorities intercepted the letter. And according to the New York Times story, Ralph Blumenthal, this was a valuable tip. This was the first tip to set this whole thing going, to go to the grave in Brazil. The letter was from a German in Paraguay, identified as Gert Luck, L-U-K, to a prisoner in West Germany by the name of Manfred Roeder, R-O-D-E-R, leader of a neo-Nazi movement known as the German Action Group. Roeder is serving 13-year sentence for planning bomb attacks. The letter said, "Uncle died sometime before on the beaches of Brazil." Now, here is a man linked to Stefano Della Calle, to Klaus Barbie, to Licio Gelli, to the P2, to all the violence in Europe on the right, to the Grey Wolves of Azov, to the Nazi movement throughout the world, and to the United States. If the name Roeder isn't familiar to you, I will refresh your memory. This Roeder that got the letter is the person who attends, and his wife attends, until he was locked up, but she does, the meetings of the Aryan Nation up in Idaho. Richard Butler from Lockheed, Manfred Roeder is the very person described on my various past broadcasts, the role of Roeder with the Aryan Nations and with Lockheed. Roeder's wife attending the meetings up there while he's locked up. And Roeder makes the connection, all of his supplies on anti-Semitism, on literature, on Jews, on killing Jews. All of that comes from Mr. Zundel up in Canada, who was just prosecuted and he's going to be deported to Germany. He said there's no Holocaust. Zundel links to those broadcasts I've done for you on the Institute of Historical Review out in California, again, to Steinecker and Kramer. And I don't want to jump around too much with these names, but the very fact that the first clue to finding Joseph Mengele as being dead and identified as part of the worldwide Nazi with Hans Ulrich Rodel and so forth comes from an avowed Nazi who worked with Rodel, who worked with Otto Skorzeny till he died in 1975. Rodel died in 83. And there are links to Sattelmeyer. This story broke with a letter saying Uncle died on the beach of Brazil. It went into the cell, and everybody knows in their prisons that mail is opened up, and this was meant to be open. And 1 month later, I had on the air that Mr. Fritz Steinecker, the attorney for Mengele, was in Zurich with Fritz Kramer and Buell, and a Mr. Foxman from the Anti-Defamation League. Now, in April of 85, after they meet in Zurich, Steinecker takes a quick trip to Israel that Jack Anderson wrote about. And this tip from Roeder, coming from an avowed Nazi of the Odessa Network, is very, very important. Now, the next tip, second tip, comes from CBS 60 Minutes Mike Douglas, that crew. You think Dan Rather is so liberal, but forget the other connections. Mike Wallace, rather, not Douglas. Mike Wallace. Another story, Ralph Blumenthal, who's been writing these accounts, said search in Germany led to exhumation. And besides the letter in prison, the New York Times, June the 26th, says a new element was added to the account by the report of a CBS News television team that recently returned from Paraguay. Barry Landau, the producer for CBS 60 Minutes, said he and a crew were just happened to be filming a German colony in eastern Paraguay May 25th, 3 weeks before the latest reports of Mengele's death. They were told by an elderly German who claimed he had known Dr. Mengele that he heard from a Mengele associate more than a year ago that the doctor died in a swimming accident some years before in Brazil. Now, this, and another person in Paraguay, and look at the pressure of Mr. Stroessner, Dictator Stroessner, to get the Mengele story off his back. Another story in Paraguay on May 25th, the same date. I don't know if it's the same person. The Daily Hov, H-O-V, carried a story with a Belgian immigrant who said Mengele had drowned in Brazil some years earlier. Alphonse Dierks, D-I-E-R-C-K-S, a 65-year-old photographer and a farmer living in a German colony in Paraguay, told the newspaper, OY means today, H-O-Y, received information from a West German friend, Alban Krug, that Mengele had died a few years before. He had taken photographs of Mengele and destroyed them. The Paraguayan report appeared 6 days before the West German investigation into the house in Bavaria that went to hand. Nobody was mentioning Mengele for years and years. And then all of a sudden, out of Paraguay, comes a newspaper report from the Daily Hoy. There is an interview with an Alphonse Dierks who got a letter from saying that Mengele was drowned, that he was dead, and somebody had pictures of him. There was CBS taking pictures for 60 Minutes, and an elderly German says that he heard Mengele drown. All of this is coming out of Paraguay. Now, the New York Times reported, Ralph Blumenthal, June the 8th, that another investigator close to the case said that the West German authorities recently received a letter from a German in Paraguay saying that they searched the Saddlemeyer house and go there to look for information. And it's when they go to that house that they find this list of, not letters, but list of addresses that leads them to the Bossert's and Stammers down in Sao Paulo, Brazil. But this anonymous letter comes, go to Saddlemeyer. So out of Paraguay are these four different letters closing the case, and Mr. Stroessner has been accused of harboring Joseph Mengele all this time. So this tip-off comes, and they go to the house and raid the house, and they don't have a search warrant, as I say, so they're kept out and away until they come back with a search warrant and go to the Saddlemeyer's house. Now, in that time, they had time to clean out the house, get rid of all the documents, but they don't. They leave the letters there, so what they find is extensive correspondence of Joseph Mengele going on up till 1979 that they just happen to have in their coat and under the bed and in her possessions that she allegedly was supposed to destroy. Letters coded with return addresses, 7 or 8 letters from Mengele, 2 letters traced to the Bossert's. And now Mr. Saddlemeyer, who's retired from the Mengele firm, has been in touch with these people in Paraguay, and these anonymous tips come in all of a sudden in April and starting in May, quickly go to that house and supposedly unknown to them, they're raided, but I don't believe it was unknown to them. I believe these things were kept there. In fact, it's in the letters that they find there, the clue of the name of the cemetery and where he would be buried and under what name, so that all they had to do was get an anonymous tip to go there and then go right to the cemetery. And why would Mr. Saddlemeyer, who's been the object of investigation all this time, all these years, who's acknowledged his relationship, why would he keep all this incriminating stuff around his house now, except for the purpose of closing the case? And who could better close the case because of the connecting links to worldwide Nazi organizations than Mr. Roeder, the well-known Mr. Roeder, sitting in a jail in Germany, who gets a letter which, in quotes, is intercepted. That is the way the case for Martin Bormann allegedly ended. If you read Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, was the tip-off of where two bodies were buried, and they went to that place, and then they could close the case based on a tip-off, which, in fact, wasn't true, but made the officials stop looking for Martin Bormann from that. Next week, I'll go into the links of Hans-Ulrich Rudell, Settlemyer, Roeder, and the Aryan Nations, and show you how this all ties together. The assassination teams, Joseph Mengele, and the charade that's going on down in Brazil right now. In the meantime, the hour is over, so I have to have a cutting off point. We'll continue with that, the Odessa Network, and it's important to understand that network before we get into who is Simon Wiesenthal again and bring up some questions about him. In the meantime, this is Mae Bressel. You take care, and I'll be back with you next week to continue on the Odessa Network and the Joseph Mengele case.